The following episode of Footy Prime the Podcast contains violence, coarse language, talking of shite, full frontal nudity, and adult scenes. Listener discretion is advised. BetMGM, the place for soccer in Canada, presents Footy Prime.
Oh, let's go!
Footy, footy, it's time to get this party started. It's the footy, footy, it's time to get this party started. With Danny, Jimmy, Gregor, Andy, Jimmy, JC. All we know and all we talk about is footy, footy. It's time to get this party started tonight.
Oh, it's Brian Dunson.
We do indeed have Brian Dunsith of MLS on Apple in a few minutes' time. Talk some US men's national team and some MLS. This is, by the way, Footy Prime. Obviously, you know that. BetMGM is the place for soccer in Canada. You know that as well. And it presents Footy Prime. JC's still in Mexico. He sends us videos just to rub it in. But he's still editing the show amazingly. I wouldn't do that. If I'm on vacation, I don't even think about you people. But he goes, no, it's fine. I'll still get the edit. I'm like, really, JC? He does not let us down. So thank you very much, JC.
He's the best.
He is. Dubs is here. Craig's here. Wonger's here. Jimmy's here. I'm Shams. Before we get to MLS, we should mention that the swamp's been drained finally. The mess has been cleaned up. We have a CBA to talk about, everyone. Oh, so exciting. Uh-huh. How many times we sat on this podcast remonstrating about the delays and what's happening and talked to all sorts of people. And there was times we spoke to people on and off the record. And there was such vitriol and acrimony between the players and Canada Soccer. It's like, this thing will never get done. And earlier this week, very quietly, actually, it was match day, wasn't it, I think, on Tuesday. Canada's playing Tunisia. They slipped it in. Oh, yeah, by the way, we signed that as well. We've done that too. We got a new deal with the CSME, we got a CBA as well. Yep, got a World Cup this summer. Things going pretty well right now. Thank God, Dubs. Just thank God. I'm so sick and tired of talking about this stuff.
No, I know. I was thinking about not only the stark difference between when I played and there were no match fees, and you alluded to that when you tweeted about it, that very like a lot of has changed for the good, which is great. But we still got to a point where, you know, the team, both the women and the men, were kind of coming up with historic results on the pitch, but the game wasn't modernizing quick enough off the pitch. And to do with pay equity, this is something that was sticking in a player's craws. I think the U.S. very much led the way south of the border. I think for all of world football in terms of the women's game, which was tremendous. I mean, there were other Scandinavian countries that were also doing it, where there was equitable distribution of monies between the men's and the women's programs, and also equal treatment between the men's and the women's program in terms of the resources allocated to each of those programs. But just a few years ago, you know, was boycotts prior to the Men's World Cup in Qatar, was Heritage Committee hearings for the women, and what's Christine bitching about. So I feel like this represents a huge leap in terms of the era we're meant to be in for Canada soccer, both from a federation standpoint, player treatment standpoint, but also just that it's professional. This is where we should be. But you know, you look at that chart with the match fees and compensation, parental leave, and child care. Like, it, we're actually where we should be, and I think it's great that that sort of bow is done, or that the bow is on the discussion. I think that the fact that it was kind of leaked or slipped in there on match day, not that it does it a disservice or that we're not talking about it enough, but just like, this is done now. The T's are crossed, the I's are dotted, and we can move forward. I think it was very important to get this done in advance of a home World Cup, but then so everything is done for the women as well, because don't forget, the funding was pulled on the women in January of 2023, you know, and it was the She Believes Cup with the purple jerseys, and, you know, when they were forced to compete almost in protest when they were playing and threatening, you know, the own federation threatening lawsuits against the players individually. So now they have a chance to have a run at a World Cup where they can prepare properly. And that's a huge difference maker from a player standpoint.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's brilliant. I think it's really good. We've criticized the CSA an awful lot over the years. And, you have to give them credit. You have to give Kevin Blue credit, president credit, to get this over the line. Not an easy job. It's, I mean, now it's done. Hindsight, you're like, oh, okay, well, whatever. But there was a time when we were saying, I'm not sure this is ever going to get done. And it's hanging over the heads of the players, the association, everybody involved. So, I mean, from the fans' point of view, I think most of them don't give a shit. But I think when they look at it deeply and understand that now we're in an area of fairness, which is really good to see.
I mean, we were told off the record, let's say a player from whom, which team, or whether they're past or present, had said, listen, this can be easily solved with a briefcase full of money. That's what they were told. That's where it's come from. Those conversations, this being done now, pay equity. Everyone's aboard. It seems the men are very much aboard pay equity. It wasn't before with necessarily all the players. So
I don't think Dubs knew that they said someone said that.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure.
Like, because her eyes just went.
No, I know. Nope.
Oh no.
Hey, I'm going to. I'm going to get into character and read my and be my best Kevin Blue. I didn't bring my vest, but this is what Kevin said. For a while now, our national team players and Canada Soccer have been aligned as partners. The formal ratification of this CBA further reinforces our positive relationship. And we look forward to supporting them during their upcoming international tournaments as they represent Canada. I can imagine all three of you representing Canada. You've all told stories about having to play where things have not always been easy and representing this country. So it must be a conflicted kind of approach sometimes when I remember Craig and Jimmy were talking about the deal hadn't been signed and you had like a game a day later or something like that. And they came running down. Yeah. Hey, the deal's done. Here are your new Nike shoes or something.
Oh yeah. We were less than 12 hours away from a World Cup qualifier and we still didn't have a deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fun times, isn't it? Yeah. Negotiations. Hey,
we're a professional outfit now.
What is it now? I think they get 20 grand each, don't they, the players, for their help accommodate their families at World Cups?
Mm-hmm.
25 grand match fees, I believe. That's 25 grand?
No.
Are you sure?
It can't be 25 grand. We couldn't afford that. I think they'd be bust, wouldn't they? And they're like, 2 years.
We'll dig it up before we don't consider
Over a million a game.
But 25 grand match fees, that's the pool?
No. Where is this thing? Let me look at that.
I've got the appendix. I went through the whole CBA.
Charms is just today. Making things up.
Yeah, I'm just stirring the pot, cause some problems.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really. Anyway, there's match fees. Decent match fees.
Bag of money. Nothing like a bag of money can't solve.
That wasn't the case. There wouldn't be match fees.
Well, 20 grand for the families, that would get you 3 tickets.
Hey, should we bring a guest on now?
Get his thoughts. We shall. Let me bring
him. No, you're right though, Sharms. World Cups for both the women and the men, group stage, 25 grand fee per game.
Yeah.
It's huge.
Yeah. It's an improvement. We're joined now by Brian Dunseth.
Hey,
Brian. Welcome to Footy Prime, mate. I think it's the first time.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, appreciate it. Hopefully, you guys hear me. Everything good?
No, you sound great.
Okay.
Actually, your set looks very similar to Amy's, actually.
Yeah, same numbers.
Oh, wait. Yeah. Are you 13?
Yeah, 13 was my number and 2. Yeah, those were the two.
Oh,
I like you better as a 13. I'll just say that right off the top. Yeah.
Yeah, me too. I always like 13 because everyone's like, oh, it's a scary number. You go in an elevator. It's not even there for a button to push. It's bad luck. And I was like, I'm going to reverse this. I gotta psychologically get ahead of this. Plus, because nobody wanted the number and I was a big enough donkey that no one was able to put that position, it was kind of a perfect number to get.
It was always Ryan, are you also married to a former Ivy League hockey player too, like Dubs is?
No. My wife wants nothing to do with soccer, so it's even better. I come home. There's no conversation about soccer, nothing about football. It's just my boys. And I got back from Atlanta the other day, and I was like, hey, did you happen to catch it? Like, was the suit matching? Was like, did I have my HD makeup on? You know, like all that. And she goes, didn't see it. Like, awesome.
I love it. My wife will often, I'll be on TV doing something and a live hit or a live show, and I'll get a text from her about, you know, something innocuous. Like, do you, you don't even know what I do, do you? You have no clue what I do.
I'm on air right now.
Yeah, right now. I left the house 3 hours ago to go to work in a suit. And here you are texting me during the broadcast. Thanks for watching.
And then having teenagers, it's my middle boy goes, Dad, getting old, and a little bit of gray's popping through, and I was like, and I know what I did to myself.
A little bit of Just for Men can't sort out.
Start painting myself.
Yeah. All right, Brian. Listen, before we get to MLS, obviously it was a week for the U.S. men's national team.
Yeah.
Losing heavily to Belgium and then losing to Portugal. We've been talking on this show about, you know, before World Cups and the build-up, scheduling these marquee matchups against big-ticket teams, which, yeah, it's great for bums in the seats and eyeballs, but you might lose them.
Yeah.
Is it wise, do you think? And you understand why they're doing it from a monetary standpoint, but from a footballing standpoint, did you get it?
I do. I mean, obviously there's jeopardy, right? Especially when you come out of a window where you had so much equity in results during the kind of September, October, November window. And it's weird because I was just having this conversation about Mexico, where we didn't know who Mexico was at all in the fall. And now we have a pretty good, decent idea after the games against Portugal and Belgium, how tough they are to kind of break down. Specific to talking to the United States, listen, there's no World Cup qualifying. So you lose. I mean, I remember talking to Tyler Adams about the younger generation coming through in this cycle. And he's like, how do you explain being in Honduras at 2 o'clock in the afternoon when the sun's belting down on you, the grass is over your boots, and you got guys with AK-47s kind of like walking around the perimeter? And like, there, you know, the sense of urgency of waking up in the middle of the night because the fire alarms are pulled or the speakers are 15 feet tall outside your windows, you know, and just the mental manipulation of the game. Like, those are all like little data points as these players are growing in, because, you know, I don't think people realize at times for the U.S., you've kind of been going through two ceilings worth of players. You went through the failure of 2018, where you're talking about guys like Tim Howard and Clint Dempsey and Michael Bradley, Jermaine Jones, like all of those guys, where it was just this glass ceiling where players couldn't break through. And now for this recent generation, I mean, the U.S. team isn't really that far off from the round of 16 loss against Netherlands, where you're still talking about the same names, Jedi Robinson, Tyler, obviously no Eunice this time again, but Weston and Timmy Weah and Christian Pulisic, Gio Reyna, Brendan Aaronson as a sub, Serginho Dest, Matt Turner. Like, these are all really we're talking about the margins. And if you said, you know, is Chris Richards an upgrade from Walker Zimmerman? Most likely. If you're talking about that midfield, is there more depth and competition? Probably. But it's a different system and a different idea. So to your original question, yes, there's jeopardy. But it's funny. I had a really fun conversation with Roberto Martinez. And he was like, I'm getting blasted by managers to make sure my players come back healthy. Because what we're trying to build is these kind of short little blocks of, hey, let's remember who we are at the international level versus who you are at the domestic level. And that kind of tied into what, you know, Mauricio Pochettino was talking about. How do we find these players like a Johnny, theoretically, that's playing for Diego Simeone at Atletico Madrid, where maybe it's a lower block and maybe he's a bit more of a piece of a puzzle to where now he's the man and he can manufacture emotion, manufacture momentum, and it's more of a press as opposed to maybe sit and deflect an umbrella effect any opponent that's coming through. So I think the jeopardy in all of this is the psyche. But also, I think the psychology of what we thought Mauricio Pochettino's idea, his game state model, I don't know anymore. I really don't know. I thought we were three in the back. I thought that, you know, the idea of the way the shape was looking between the subtraction of Serginho Dest and maybe Miles Robinson being injured to and Tyler Adams, obviously. To the return and multiplication of having a guy like Jedi Robinson and his player profile. And then to you know, to throw the baby and the bathwater out at the same time, starting Christian Pulisic as the number nine. And when that came through, you know, Bees and I are looking at each other going, could you imagine being Flo Balogun or Ricardo Pepi, who I think played 11 minutes, or Patrick Ajuman or even Haji Wright, watching that game and going, well, I guess we're only taking three strikers to the World Cup. So, yeah, there's jeopardy in all of this. I love it, though, because at the end of the day, when are you going to learn? I mean, you're not really going to learn against Uzbekistan or Oman. You know, you're going to learn in these games, not theoretically, practically, either how close you are or how far off you are.
Don't you feel like those learnings, though, are for the positive after you go on a 5-game unbeaten run where you absolutely crush Uruguay? Was it 5-1? Yeah. And then you go to this tactical kind of mess around or fuckery, whatever you want to call it, where you have the strengths in the nine, as you just mentioned, yeah. And you want to play Pulisic almost as a false nine. Like, why would you go back to that and mess with it so close to the World Cup when you've had success over the last couple of windows?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I could sit here and tell you what I think I know, but I don't know, because what I've realized, and I mean this with all due respect to Pochettino and his coaching staff. You know, we talk about Jesus and talk about Mickey and you talk about Tony Jimenez, the goalkeeper coach, and Jack and everyone behind the scenes. I can only express what I've experienced. These guys know what they're doing. That doesn't mean that we have any of the more of the insight of what they're trying to accomplish. But I will say it's interesting, right? Because Christian coming back from injury, I think it was like 9 goals, 3 assists, something like that. He and Lautaro Martinez to start the year off. And I think had it not been for this run, I think it was a 1-2 punch of Lautaro Martinez and Christian having statistically the best, you know, goal contributions per match in City off for the last 2, maybe even 3 years. But I can remember, I believe it was against Panama. And Yunus Musa at the time wasn't playing a lot of minutes at AC Milan. And he was talking about how he was going to give Yunus the start. But he started him as like a right wing back, like almost as a hybrid of the way Timmy Weah was kind of playing in this system. And not that he hadn't, but it was just less than normal for a Yunus Musa with the way that we'd seen him with the national team. And the idea was like, how do I recover his confidence? And even with Flo Balogun coming back from the injuries at Monaco, it wasn't that he was in form at Monaco. It was, how can I recover his confidence? And he's always been very, Maurice has been very strategic in this idea of, I'd rather not bring players in that are maybe struggling. And it's obviously case by case, because we did the broad stroke during the Gold Cup of, you know, you play for the crest, you play for the badge. That means you're always available. But it is more case by case, because we can talk about obviously Gio and the form that he's in and, you know, these data points. But it's almost like Mauricio has the challenge in his own mind of, when I'm about to name that World Cup roster, how do I have players mentally and physically in the best possible form? And regardless of whatever else is happening, how do I have them in the best form that it's no longer about the club? It's no longer about social media and Twitter X and whoever else. You know, all of us as talking heads trying to figure this out. It's, how do I pick the best team in the moment that's available to me that'll get me through this progressive tournament where there's effectively 6 days in between every match to start this? And that's why I thought maybe we'd see some more of what we've already seen, or maybe we'd see Gio used for an extra 20 or 30 minutes just to see how his body maintains fitness. And Christian, I'm thinking to myself, if he's got him closer to goal, maybe he's creating more goal-scoring opportunities or goal contribution moments. And then that gets him in this run where all of a sudden in the next, I don't know, 5 weeks, he's coming back with, you know, 6, 7, 8 goal contributions at AC Milan to finish the season.
So let's wrap it up with the USMNT. You've obviously got some concerns about, you know, what Poch is doing, but then you list off all those players. There's a proper team in there somewhere. That's a good football team. Mm-hmm. What are your hopes for this World Cup? What do you expect in this World Cup? The groups, let's be honest, no groups are pushover, but out of all the groups, it's a pretty good one for the hosts to be in.
Yeah, I mean, it could be a lot worse. I mean, what I think we used to say, you know, group of death, but I guess it's turned to like group of hard. I think that obviously there's a blessing in the fact that all of the teams in the group stage that they've already faced, right? They faced Turkey in a game that where VAR is involved, Christian Pulisic goal counts and they don't lose 2-1. You know, if Johnny doesn't turn that ball over. What I've realized in all of it, razor thin margins, razor thin margins. In both of these games against Belgium and Portugal, if Christian, and this isn't a Christian problem, but, you know, the United States scoring goals, if they would have scored their chances, it negates the opponent from scoring immediately right after, within 2 to 3 minutes. It changes the flow, complexity, and don't even get me started on the stupidity of 11 subs at this stage. It just it irritates me to no end. The blessing is that they've already familiarized themselves with the three opponents. The curse is that now the three opponents have also familiarized themselves with the United States. So I look at players that can make differences, you know, those special players that can create something out of nothing, the manufacturing moments. And obviously, in all three games, we've seen different types of disciplines where you talk about technical side, you talk about the physicality side. Paraguay and Australia are going to be very physical. And so in a weird way, that's going to be really simple when we talk about the intensity and statistics of closing down space, combativeness. And something that was missing in both of these was like, I was waiting for Tyler Adams to be running around MFing everybody and, you know, throwing his arms around. And like, you can feel it. Like Chris Richards, you can feel his leadership on the field. Get through the group stage. I don't really care. However you figure this out, because we're talking about opponents, we're talking about yellow card accumulation, we're talking about referee involvement, not a lot of travel that's outside of, you know, crazy nature for these guys. And figuring out ways to replicate 2002, where you're a Torsten Frings handball off the line that separates you from, you know, these monumental moments in U.S. soccer history. I work with Tony Miola every day. My first roommate as a pro was Alexi Lawless. I've seen the power. You know, I was with Harksey and Waldo and Tab Ramos and all these guys. I've seen the power of the World Cup. Not that I experienced it, anything other than a teenager in Southern California. I couldn't afford tickets. I was outside the Rose Bowl. I was, you know, donating time at the LA Convention Center just to feel it. So now for my kids to be in that same moment, to see this and to understand what this did for players. I mean, Alexi speaks Italian because of his performances at the Rose Bowl, you know, like scoring against AC Milan, Inter Milan, all these things. So I just hope these guys realize that whatever Olympics is on steroids is what this moment for these guys are. And it's not just about the game. It's effectively how we're going to remember them for the rest of our lives based on what they're capable of doing this summer.
Now your kids are going to be outside the stadium like you because they won't be able to afford the tickets.
Well, I did have an angle on tickets for the U.S. teams, and I couldn't transfer them. And I was like, because I'm going to be in Mexico for the World Cup. I'm going to be down there in Monterey for the start of the group stage. Yeah. And so I was like, I'm going to have a completely different experience of the World Cup in the beginning.
What hotel room?
We'll open it up. I got a single bed. We got plenty of room on the bed.
Hey, I'll cuddle. I'm a big spooner.
Hey, man, that's what you want somehow.
Okay, switching to MLS quickly here. So it resumes this weekend. It's been an intriguing start to the season. Three unbeaten teams so far, LAFC, Nashville, and San Diego. They've all been just great, let's be honest, built on really strong defense. But is it one of those that's surprised you so far?
So Max and I call him Tio Max, Uncle Max. Tio and I have been primarily on the West Coast. And so we've seen virtually everybody, and heading up to Vancouver to watch, you know, to be a part of the game against Portland this weekend. And what I've realized is that LAFC, having done, gosh, I think we did four matches in a row, defensively, they're much stronger than people are giving them credit for. I think when you talk about the leadership in the back in terms of who's in between the posts and five clean sheets so far for Hugo Lloris to start the season, defensively, they look really sound. It's funny because Mark Dos Santos was trying to separate himself from the idea of Steve Cherundolo being too defensive. And yet at the start of the season, especially with Eddie Segura playing more of a holding hybrid of a three, they're as defensive, if not better defensively. Sonny's not finding the back of the net the way he was, but they're still figuring out ways to win games. San Diego, I mean, who could have predicted that Mikey Veras and Tyler could put together a team of guys that nobody really knew outside of Chucky Lozano and then effectively walk from 30 million and just completely sideline him with zero havoc created whatsoever. I mean, the vibe in San Diego, we've been down there, and there's no anger towards the situation. They're just like, well, we're winning, and this guy obviously isn't a part of it, so they know better than everybody else. Vancouver's is they're going to they're going to knock some people around. The top three is very, very clear. And then Nashville, I'm a huge BJ Callahan guy. I just think what he's done, you know, going all the way back to the Philadelphia Union days to what he did with Greg Berhalter, the installation during his time as U.S. manager with whatever that was behind the scenes with U.S. soccer. And then what he's done with Hani and Sam and somehow getting a free Christian Espinosa in that conversation. They've been built to be combative and difficult. And then in transition moments and build up play, Hani's just one of those special players, like Evander, that in a moment can kind of like open things up for you. So I think all the teams you hit on, I'm really intrigued. And this is because I'm in Salt Lake and I've seen it from the inside out. I'm really intrigued to watch Real Salt Lake maneuver through the Western Conference. Not that they're going to win it, but I think with a healthy Olatunji up top, Gila Vogui and Diego Luna right underneath those guys, Goso, I'm telling you, this kid is one of the most genuine human beings and mature teenagers that I've been around. I mean, he'll walk through and introduce himself to everybody, and you can just feel there's no arrogance. There's just this kid that wants to kill himself for the team. And they've got a kid named Arias, a 22-year-old center back from Colombia that hasn't played yet, that I think, you know, Engel on one side of Justin Glad, they're going to – Sanabria opposite, they're going to be very combative. And if they figure out ways to score goals, and I would assume a pissed Diego Luna missing out because he was recovering from that knee injury and the jeopardy of him potentially not making this roster amplifies what his performance was, similar to missing out on the Olympics a couple of summers ago. So those would be the teams that I'm interested in. But obviously you got to figure out what this looks like for Inter Miami, not just in the present, but an international window that's right around the corner. And if they get Casemiro included into that group.
Yeah.
I don't know how they're making this work, by the way. I mean,
I know.
Yes, we do. We do. There's some under the table stuff going on, going through a car wash.
It's just the designation of roster spots.
Exactly. Listen, Brian, thanks so much, mate. I know you got to run, but I really enjoyed this. We'll get you back on again at some point.
Absolutely. Really appreciate you guys. Thank you. And if not,
before you jump, just because. Favorite Prem team we need to know.
Oh, you're not going to like it. I'm a Man United guy.
But
at least what I can tell you is that is one of my best friend in high school, a guy named Ben Hooper. His family was in Oldham. This is 92.
Okay.
So he was sending me, kids, close your ears, VHS tapes. And we were literally like, and the kids don't know today. They're like, oh, my God, my Spotify doesn't open. I'm like, no. When the tape grabs and rips and it's ruined and you can't figure, like, it's a disaster. The kids don't know, like, Super Nintendo days.
You can't fix it.
We had to, like, double stack. And you had to blow it to, like, make it work. Like, we all had our own. I was old school. Yeah, like Steve Bruce and Pabors. Like, I was before the class of 92, so. I know recently is pain and suffering and the fact that nobody can, you know, in terms of the eyeball test, I call it right now, I'm in my third month. I'm about to go my third month of Ruben Amorim Independence Day. I just look back with fire and flames over being told how poor this group of players was.
And finally, we know from our team, if we're not cheering for Canada, who U.S. men's national team, let's say they do well, get to the round of 16, but then are knocked out. Who are you cheering for?
Yeah, it's an easy one. I also grew up with two Argentine brothers. But in the whispers of Cuti Romero leaving Spurs to come join Licha Martinez, like two blades in the back, I start drooling. As a former center back, I have an affinity for Argentine football, for Argentine national team, because I grew up with these guys. So I kind of like took on as a second team Argentina. I know that's really cool to say now because of these last couple of years and the trophies that they've won. But yeah, I just, there's something about from like a Pochettino to an Otamendi to a Licha to a Cuti Romero. There's something about center backs, Argentine center backs. Mm-hmm. After watching, you know, Belgium and Portugal up close as well, aesthetically, it's hard not to enjoy that style of football. So yeah, I would say from South America, more RG, maybe from, I'll stick, even though I'm not sure about their goal scoring right now, because Cristiano, and I'm not positive about Gonzalo Ramos. I love Vitinha. I love João Neves. I love Bruno. I think that midfield for Portugal is a generational midfield right now that we could be looking back and being all like, my God, how lucky were we to watch. So maybe Portugal from like a UEFA standpoint.
Amazing. Well, the other thing I was going to say is way to go for the underdogs. It means a lot, Man United and Argentina.
Yeah, I mean, all we've really won is the, and I say we, is the Gummy Bear Cup, which I lovingly refer to as the Carabao Cup. I know. Let me simplify it. I'm a Clippers guy. Like, if I had to choose, I'm an LA Clippers guy because I hate the Dodgers. I hate the Lakers. I hate the Kings because I was more IE Inland Valley. Mm-hmm. So, like, Mighty Ducks and Angels. So, I promise you, I'm not a front runner.
Hey man, listen, you dropped the Carol Baborski names. That's good enough. You're a proper fan. Thanks so much, Brian. Really enjoyed this.
Cheers, guys. Appreciate it. Looking forward to
next. Thanks, Brian.
Awesome. Thanks, Brian.
That is Brian Dunstith, MLS on Apple. That was a fun chat. Like, I love people just passionate about football, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's great. And he made some really valid points about the US team and just what is Poch doing. I wonder what is there a word we can use to sum up Poch's era as State's head coach? I mean, inconsistent?
Being average?
Yeah. I mean,
schizophrenic?
Schizophrenic, maybe. Yeah. I mean, it's amazing what a World Cup success will do for a manager's reputation. But at this point, I'm not sure he's delivered. There's more questions than answers right now regarding that squad. And when Brian, like I said, he reeled off those names, there's some really good players there. Right.
But can you imagine, and I'm just thinking about our scenario in Canada with Jesse Marsh asking for a re-up of his contract right before the World Cup or like a couple of weeks ago. Can you imagine Poch trying to do the same thing right now? They'd be like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
I don't think the Americans have anything to worry about.
No.
Come tournament time, they'll turn it on. Mm-hmm. They'll get out of the group stage. They'll go on a little run. They're a tournament team. The last time they didn't get out of the group stage was in 1998. Last four World Cups, they turn it on and they get through. That they've got a good enough squad. And the thing is, look, we're talking about, you know, what's he doing or he's trying this. This is a time when you want to try things. It's friendlies. Mm-hmm. You put people in other places and try things out because as the tournament goes, you might have to be able to adjust in the tournament. But if you haven't practiced adjusting, trying people in different positions in these friendlies, then you're not prepared going into a World Cup. If you just play the same players, play the same way, go into the tournament, fuck, it's predictable. You have to try things. That's what a friendlies are for.
But I think my problem, not so much with that, Jimmy, is the fact that I don't think he's found anything. I think he's still searching. I don't know if he has an idea in his head what his final plan is. Which is concerning. Yeah. If that was something that you could say, okay, we've tried this, but we know so and so is going to go in there, they're okay. But I'm not sure he's actually found it, and he's still searching for answers, and he's running out of time. So it's, you know, it's hard to turn it on.
Yeah, but he's had some great results though, hasn't he? And then he's had some ones that weren't so good because he's tried certain things.
Mm-hmm.
Look, I think he knows his 11. He knows his formation. He knows exactly what he's going to be doing going into this tournament. It's not that he's not going to be unprepared.
No. Well, it's difficult. International managers, I mean,
of course it is.
Pochettino, club level, he could be working with these guys, you know, 24/7 for week after week after week, right? Now they're all back to their club teams, and he's like sitting there with more questions than answers.
Well, that's one thing I want to ask you guys, you know, players that played club football and that had international breaks. In that, so it's all very well about being comfortable with your teammates and who you're playing beside or behind or in front of. But there's so much football between now and the next camp. There's going to be 2-3 weeks between opening the May camp and kicking off at the World Cup. I mean, as far as familiarity goes, is that overstated in international football? You do have time once you get into camp to work together. Just because you had a great combination with a guy 3 months ago, right? And you haven't seen him since. Right. Is that overstated that you must get that 11 and get them used to playing together all the time at international football?
Not so much if you're comfortable right out of the gate. So, you know, you can fit into that situation. But if you had a couple bad results and you're you're thinking about that. I mean, how many times we've seen even international teams, club teams with really good players, good squad of players that haven't been able to perform. I mean, look at Tottenham. I mean, technically speaking, you look at their players, you go, yeah, they should not be fighting for relegation, but they are. And manager after manager haven't been able to figure out this squad of players to be able to fit them in the right places and get winning results.
I don't think it is overstated at this point. We're getting down to the wire, right? A couple of preparatory friendlies, as Jimmy's saying, it's just friendlies. It's time to experiment. Yes, 100%. But I think you're still doing it with either your nailed on starters or 12, 13, 14 players. You know that even if you're going to tweak tactically slightly, go with a back three instead of a back four, I think you're morphing into that with the players that you know you're going with. And like with the fact, you know, Brian alluded to it, the U.S. has so much depth at the nine. Like it's just an embarrassment of riches almost. And like, so why are you screwing around with Pulisic as a false nine? Like, yeah, get him closer to goal, but be tactically fluid with the guys that you know you're going to have success with. And so it just seems really strange to me that he's willing to use an expression that Brian used, throw out the baby with the bathwater when you had so much success, like absolutely resounding results versus Uruguay, one of the world powers in men's football. And then you go against two, again, heavy hitters in Belgium and Portugal. And not only do you not have the intensity that brought you success in that 5-game unbeaten run, but you kind of do something completely different. Yes, again, I know the friendlies. You have the ability to be flexible and to try different players and try different things. But I think you should be going with, as you're saying, Sharms, you know, partnerships, synergies, players that are going to be working together that are going to bring you success. And so if you do it a little bit too much, it could be to your disadvantage in the end.
Then, I mean, look at England, for example, another team I obviously follow closely, and what Tuchel did this past window, this past camp. Lots of players in, and the 11s he put in the pitch are really nothing like you're going to see at the World Cup. There's a lot of players there that will be in the periphery.
Yeah.
So he doesn't care about it.
What was the result, Sharms? Because we were talking
about
this.
1-0.
That's right. First time that England has ever lost to an Asian team, correct, Greg?
I believe that's correct.
In soccer.
Well,
no, that's not true. Didn't North Korea beat England in one of the biggest upsets ever? Back in like the 50s?
Oh, with the brown ball.
Yeah, the brown ball.
Okay.
I'm sure it's one of the
biggest.
Do you know,
Jimmy?
I'm sure.
Or you just wanted to talk about a brown ball?
Yeah.
Was that North Korea too?
North Korea, yeah. I'm sure it was.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, something like that.
So then my stat, Craig told me the stat yesterday as we were hanging out, and now I put it in my brain to throw out for the podcast, and it's wrong. So thanks, Craig.
Oh, I don't know.
Misconfirming this. Yeah. Oh, wait, that's different. That's under-17s. Under-17s, North Korea beat England 4-0 in the Women's World Cup. Just two years ago.
Yeah.
So men's may be wonger. But even then, I think there was an infamous one. I'm going to look it up. I can't believe I can't even think of it. It's such a famous match. But
yeah. Anyway,
while you're looking, though, I'll put it to you guys this way, Jimmy or Craiger or anybody who wants to weigh in. If Jesse Marsh had his preferred back line at his disposal, if Eustachio was available, do you think we would have seen the players that we saw this window?
No.
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 I don't know. I don't know.
No?
You have to give opportunity to other players, and other players have to come in. They have to get a taste. You got to think, since June 7th, they've had 12 friendlies plus a Gold Cup, plus another two games coming up. That's going to be 14 friendlies since last June. Mm-hmm. It's a hell of a lot. So you have to see other players. You have to. And as a manager, you know who your 11 is going to be. You know who your top players are. But you have to see who other players are, how they work with other individuals, different formations. Because if these starters that you have go down, there's other players that have to come in and be able to do the job. You can't just ride your 11 the whole time and say, okay, these are going to be the guys that we're going to try every single window. You have to give opportunity. because you're going to rely on these guys. And if you get through the group stage, it's going to get even harder. Mm. And you're going to pick up niggles, and other guys are going to have to jump in and fill positions. Things happen. Guys pull hamstrings. Guys get injured. Guys get suspended. You have to be able to know your roster 100% and who can come in and do a job.
The reason I was going to interrupt was because you're getting so much love on yesterday's video. Everyone's like, Jimmy Brennan is right. There's about 35 comments, and about 28 of them are about Jimmy Brennan and his football acumen and how he would do things. So if you want to pat yourself on the back and your head blow up, go to the YouTube comments. Dubs, you stay away from them.
Oh, really?
No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
Some anti-Dub sentiment?
No, none whatsoever. No, it was just very pro-Jimmy and very, hey, I like what Jimmy's talking about. Jimmy Brennan knows what he's talking about. So it was quite interesting as I was going through it, seeing if there was a Wong or Amy Walsh negative comment. Misogyny and racism is all I can say. I'm always right.
I would say, though, like to... Oh, sorry, Sharms. Like, I'm disappointed.
No, you go ahead. You're way more interested than me.
No, I'm not.
It's very okay. Very quickly, when England won the World Cup in the 66, actually, North Korea was one of the stories of the tournament. They beat Italy 1-0 in that tournament, for the record. Got to the quarterfinals. But Italy...
And you didn't find out the answer. I think
I'm still like, can't.
My phone stay on point. Stay on target, Sharps.
My shitty laptop I'm using for this kind of stuff.
Tell me if I'm wrong. I think that game was at Everton. It was at Goodison Park.
Really? Okay. Someone's got a computer that works properly. They can look it up.
Yes.
Anyway, I'm sure someone will let us know whether we're correct or we're totally wrong. Before we go, though, I want to talk about CPL. It kicks off this weekend. Jimmy, you'll be on the call on a couple of games. Back in there, Jimmy. It was announced today that there'll be a lot of distribution for the league this season on TSN, on CBC, on TVR, RDS, as well as, of course, on OneSoccer and Fubo. So that's great. Where is it here? Sorry. They have also announced, and this is exciting, they've gone back to the old playoff format. Oh, my God.
I didn't mind it either.
I didn't really like it, though, to be fair.
Yeah,
well, it's different. It's innovative. Okay, let's try something different. They're like, let's go back to two-legged semifinals.
It makes sense.
That didn't happen.
It's common sense. That's how you do it. I understand, and I appreciate them for the innovation. We talked about that earlier this week with the offside, and they're trying things out. Why not try stuff? It's a league to try things. It's a try-it-out league, which is really important. But I'm just happy that they've gone back to something that makes sense to me. 1v4, 2v3. Two-legged semifinals, boom, final. Pretty simple.
Mm-hmm. I think with the amount of teams, that makes sense. But, I mean, look what's happening in, Major League Soccer. 9 of each conference teams make it to the playoffs. It's,
a bit much.
It's way too many. There should be more emphasis on the regular season than there is. So,
the first time I've heard you say that, Forrest. It's very surprising.
I'm always surprised. Do you want to know? I'm surprised at what you three, and even Sharms, what you guys are traditionalists about and what not. It's always interesting to me because I'm so new to this. And I know I'm six and a half years in now, but I'm still new to what people's biases are, what they've liked. I mean, Sharms, every time we talk VAR, he goes, if you don't, he has to play devil's advocate. But he doesn't like VAR. I can tell you that right now, right? Like, Sharms, you've always been someone who said, we don't need it. This part of the game is good. What about this video review with the CPL's doing? What about
the
offside?
I like to focus my hate and disdain on one person in particular, the referee. It's much easier for me than my disdain and hatred towards a disembodied, computer and a couple of officials in a box somewhere else. I'm screaming and pointing at that guy. Much easier for me. It's a purer hate.
Right.
I think we need more purity in our hate in football. Easy, right?
Yeah, you're not mad at AI.
I can't get mad at AI. It's going to be my boss one day anyway, so if not already. But I also acknowledge it's not going anywhere. They're not going to just one day say, we don't like VAR. It's gone. It's like nuclear weapons, right? You can't disinvent something. Mm. They're always going to be there. And it's, some would say, more evil than nuclear weapons.
This guy's thought about this, hasn't he?
Yeah, it's pretty philosophical. Existential threats to football and the world.
AI, nuclear weapons. I'm in a space these days.
Shar's went heavy in the AI for his research.
That's right. AI, if you're listening, AI, I'm on your side, Skynet. Sharps would be on Skynet's. You know, we're fighting. We're in Terminator. It's the future. Sharps is like, get them first. They're the first to go. I'm cozying up to Skynet.
Sharps is in his bunker.
You know, I watched live this weekend. I watched with Joe, Wayne's World, thinking she'd love Wayne's World. She didn't.
Oh, yeah.
A little bit old. It's brilliant, though. But there's a scene, I forgot all about it, is when the Terminator cop pulls him over and walks towards the car. And I was like pissing myself. And she's like, what the hell are you even laughing about? Like, you don't understand Terminator. Christ. Like, you know, Terminator? Come on. It's a guy that kind of becomes all liquid.
And she's just looking at you with like a blank stare. Yeah.
Why did mom ever marry you? Mm-hmm. Anyway, what's something else? Artemis. Did anyone watch the rocket launch yesterday?
I did.
Yeah. Were you like me again? Going down a path here. Were you kind of a little bit nervous? Like, oh God, this could go horribly wrong.
I didn't watch it. I watched it on Twitter replay. I wasn't in the 3, 2, 1 countdown where it's live.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretend live, as Dubs was referring to the other day. Did they really land on the moon?
I didn't start that.
Yeah, you did.
No, that guy did.
I may have helped it along, but I think you started it.
There's a Canadian on board.
Yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Presumably. I thought I saw it when I looked out the window. It was air transit flight to going to Puerto Rico. When I really zoomed in.
It's like, think of
are they going to check out your mod on the moon while they're up there?
They know they can't go near that.
I'll just make sure the stakes are in the ground, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Now, this is the deepest space humans have ever traveled, I believe, right? Isn't that what it is? The dark side of the moon. It's pretty cool. Hmm. It is. But yeah, I was getting flashbacks to, was it 86 with Challenger?
Yeah.
I remember that really vividly.
Sure the date, but yeah, that was.
Oh yeah, those TVs wheeled into those classrooms and scarred a generation.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
I mean, those back in the day, those moon launches of the Apollo missions were seen by millions and millions of people. They were like tuning in until it got me to, you know, it's old hat. Oh, they're going to the moon again, and they, you know, sort of just drop off. Same with the Challenger and the space shuttle program. Started off great ratings, cool. People watching it, and then it became, you know, sort of almost like, yeah, we're going to space again.
It's kind of like us. We get boring after a while.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Repetitive.
Dub shared a really great comment from our Apple comments and reviews. So we want to just encourage everyone to keep conversing with us in being interactive. We actually answer things. I know we are interactive and we like to engage. So this one is great footy coverage, 5 stars from our friend GRP416. This podcast crew is the most entertaining crew in football. Ex-players plus sportscasters chat about anything under the sun like lifelong friends. Hilarious and informative. So I just want, thank you, Sharms. You've been crushing it lately too. You've been doing double duty with Sportsnet. Jimmy, TSN, Dubs has NSL starting. Craig's going to be calling FIFA and NSL this summer. I'll be sleeping on FIFA. All of your couches at the hotels to slide in there. But I really appreciate everything you guys have been doing. And if I'm tagging along sometimes, like I said, I'll be your big spoon if you need one.
Thanks, Wonga. And you've been crushing it too with your commercial and government-based podcasts on the side, which no one listens to. You work hard, though. You work very hard on those.
Actually, they're getting rebooted. So I think it's
really
been going well. Yeah. People do listen to them. Yeah,
it's like you know what you're doing, huh?
Yeah, people know.
Speaking of which, I've got to voice something, don't I?
You do.
I jump off, and I've got to go as well real soon. So can we just
all right? So let's voice it after this.
Won't interrupt. And here we go.
Sorry, I'm sorry. I tried to interrupt you earlier. It didn't work, so I tried again. See, I'm nothing if not persistent. I wanted to say
stretch
we had
it
a
out.
Chat with Brian, and I pulled this tweet for yesterday, and we didn't get a chance to say it on air. So this is from Rob Boostery on Twitter. And he said, did the U.S. men's national team get a win against two elite teams right before the World Cup? No. Did we at least learn some valuable lessons to take into the summer? Also no. But did we at least have fun while watching our favorite team play soccer? No. I think it summed up the sentiments of that U.S. men's national team fan base in this window, which they viewed as kind of a decisive one prior to the World Cup, and they were let down.
Well, listen, to end the show, it's a great slogan to use for us too, right? Mm-hmm. What is the point?
Charms, I wish you hadn't latched onto that in that way. I guess it's my fault. I'll just shut up now.
Tagline, Charms.
Oh, yeah. It is the point. You can play now. Funny Prime is brought to you by BetMGM. Make it legendary. Back tomorrow.
Footy Prime is brought to you by BetMGM. Make it legendary. Check us out on YouTube at youtube.com/footyprime and subscribe. Leave us some comments. We'd love to hear those. And check us out on Instagram at @footyprimeig and on Twitter at @footy_prime. And check out wearefootyprime.com. Sign up for our newsletter.
Also, Ben Pepple didn't play. I was just finding that.
I agree.
The can of worms opened.